This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The party on Wall Street might be over. That's according to our guest today. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
And it's always great to join you, Andy.
Yes, and markets have felt some pressure, at least the past few sessions, and that's where I want you to start. What's your read on Wall Street?
Well, obviously the market is overbought. If you look at any sentiment indicator, it shows that a lot of people have become very, very bullish. And in a sense, sentiment always is early, Andy. So it tells you you're in a zip code of a high, but it doesn't offer really any precision. The key thing, I believe, is the S&P declining below about 5150. And that number is derived because if you look at a chart of the S&P going back to last October, there is a trend line connecting lows starting in late November. And we've been in this upward channel for all this time. And I think a decline below the lower upper channel or lower channel line will be a signal that the rally is over. So I think we're really, really close. But until you get that breakdown below that trend line, Andy, you have to respect that the momentum has been positive and investors are very happy to buy the dip.
We're talking about momentum and where the markets are technically. But what are the fundamentals behind that pressure that we're feeling or that we're seeing as of late?
Well, I think, really, again, you have some stocks that have had gigantic runs. So there is some profit taking going on there. The market is stretched. So I think you have just a little bit of ebb and flow. More importantly, I think, Andy, is that Wall Street has concluded that the Fed will, in fact, deliver 3 rate cuts in the course of this year.
I can't see how that's going to happen at this point. So, but go ahead.
Well, again, where they're drawing their confidence from is that the summary of economic projections, which the Fed produces every 3 months. So they did one last December. They did one last week at the March meeting. In December, they said that the Fed funds rate would be at 4.6% at the end of 2024. In March, they had the same number, 4.6%. So that's really all Wall Street needed to see last week, Andy, to conclude that, hey, they're going to give us the goods and deliver the 3 rate cuts. Now, I went into a deep dive in this week's weekly technical review and analyzed each of the 19 dots. And it's subtle, but there are some significant changes. The average of all the dots in December was 4.7%. in March, 4.81%. So they, you look at this SEP, hey, it stayed at 4.6, nothing to worry about. If you look at it more closely, you see that, in fact, there was a shift inside by a number of FOMC members. I'll note that in March, there were nine members who expected the funds rate to be 4.875%, which was up from 8 in December. In December, there were five members who expected the funds rate to be 4.37% or lower. In March, only one. So the recent inflation data, Andy, has not really given the FOMC members the confidence that they are going to need to feel comfortable that in cutting the funds rate.
Exactly. I mean, they've said all along they're going to be data dependent, and yep, this is also coming in the back end of the year. You get a presidential election, and I don't see it, and it seems like your data gels with that.
Yes. And the other thing I'll mention, so let's look forward a little bit. The PCE, which is the Fed's preferred inflation metric for February, is coming out on Friday. So again, Powell reiterated during the press conference, we need to have more confidence. He said it numerous times. So my best guess in terms of what the PCE is going to show is that there will be very little progress. In other words, the numbers will be almost identical to January. Now, when the March CPI comes out on April 10th, it's likely to show an increase in the headline inflation from 3.2 to at least 3.4 and maybe, depending on rounding, 3.5. So that's in response to the big increase we've seen in crude oil prices, gasoline prices, and so forth. So my point is, if we look out over the next 2 months, and prior to the Fed's May 1st meeting, they're not going to get more confidence from the inflation data that we're going to get in the next month or two. And what that implies, I think, is when we get to June or at the May meeting, I think some of the views of some members will shift. In other words, see, I was in favor of three cuts, but now maybe only two. Or I was thinking about two, not like yesterday, Raphael Bostic, who's one of the voting members on the Fed board. He was at two cuts, and yesterday he said he's only comfortable with one. So, again, I think Wall Street, coming into this year, was looking for six cuts. They handled the idea, okay, maybe we're only going to get three cuts, but that's still cuts, and the economy is doing okay, so that's just fine enough. I think there's a risk that the market could be vulnerable if the inflation data comes in, as I just described, not as good as people are hoping. And that, I think, will lead to a pickup in selling pressure. So my expectation, Andy, is that 5150 level, I will be very surprised if the S&P is above that after we get the CPI report on April 10th.
And then as far as the consumer, they seem kind of tapped as well. That plays into all of this. I've been talking to a number of pawn shops across the country. And you know what? Their shelves are packed with stuff.
Wow.
And they can't move it. And
yeah,
Now they're forced to even pay less. So I look at various ways of checking out the economy. And it's as bad as ever. And that tells a lot when pawn shops shelves are full and they can't unload their stuff and people are coming in. And it's just a really interesting,
a
boots on the ground type look.
Yeah, it's called anecdotal information.
Yes.
Like watching what's going on in the world around you. So I love that kind of information, Andy, because it's like, as you said, street level stuff. We already know that the delinquency rate on auto loans, credit cards, are higher than any time in the last decade. In the meantime, I think it was yesterday, I read that an increasing number of people are taking withdrawals from their retirement accounts out of necessity.
Yes, I've heard that too. I mean, a lot of people now, and I think they got used to maybe tapping into it a little bit during the pandemic, more so than people had in the past. And people are now using that as almost like a credit card or a bank account, and they get it in a pinch. They'll, you know, end up having to raid their 401k. Yeah, not good sign. That's not right. A good sign at all.
And the other thing that I'm going to cover in the April macro tides is looking at the labor market. And so job growth has been holding up pretty good. I think in the last 3 months, Powell said the average was 265,000 jobs. The last 12 months, the average was 230. But if you look at the household survey, it's been far weaker. And so we have two surveys, the establishment survey, which calculates and estimates job growth. The household survey estimates the unemployment rate. There's a difference in both surveys, Andy. If I'm working and then get a part-time job, in the establishment report, they count that as a second job. The household survey does not. So what I have found is at inflection points in the economy, the surveys behave differently. So if you're coming out of a recession, the household survey does better. And conversely, prior to a recession, the household survey weakens, in part because of the way they define jobs. So
that's really an interesting nugget, Jim. I mean, that's really, you know, boiling stuff down and going, or I guess peeling the onion more so. Yeah. But that's very interesting. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. So be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back with Jim right after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
All right, back with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at macrotides.com in San Diego. All right, Jim, as we were heading into break, we were kind of talking about the setup here. What's the move for the Gains listener, and what specific levels are they watching, or they should be watching at least?
Okay, so Andy, I'd like to, before we get into that, offer your faithful listeners yesterday's weekly technical review, where I go through some of the detail that we've just covered and plus quite a bit more. So all they have to do is send me an email, jimwelshmacro@gmail.com, and I'll send you yesterday's weekly technical review.
Take all Jim right. up on that for sure. So, all right, go ahead, Jim.
So, again, I mentioned the S&P 500. It's been in a very narrow channel, which is sloping upward. So getting below 5150 will violate the downward support level that it's been holding. In addition, the S&P rallied about 1,100 points from the low in October of 2022 to the high in July of 2023. Then it bottomed in October of 23. If I add 1,115 points, I've had a target for, well, since the beginning of this year, that the S&P could rally up to 5219. We've obviously achieved that. So my point is, from a bigger picture perspective, Andy, you have three big waves up. the initial rally, the pullback to the low in October of 23, and now this subsequent rally. We are at the perfect place for a pullback of some magnitude. Now, the pullback, which occurred between July and October, was about 10%. The S&P went from 4,600 to 4,100. Something comparable, I think, is likely. So my guess is we're somewhere near a 7%, maybe up to 10% pullback over the next 1 to 2 months. And I think the trigger can be that March CPI report on April 10th. The other thing I'll just note, the market has kind of been softer, I think, as you referenced earlier, Andy. And I like it when the market goes down for no apparent reason, as it did like today. After treading water for hours, it just weakened.
Yeah.
In a sense, it wasn't reacting to a piece of news. It was reacting maybe to stock's own weight. In other words, fatigue by buyers may be setting in. And so to me, we're setting up for a pullback. So my advice is, I think, the risk is we're at the doorstep of a 7 to 10% pullback. And if the S&P declines below 4607, that to me, Andy, would signal that a much deeper decline was coming. So my assumption here, we're going to get a pullback and then another rally. That has the potential to take the S&P to higher highs. That will be negated if the S&P pulls back and drops below 4607. So whether I'm bullish, looking for a pullback and then higher prices, or, oh boy, we might be on the doorstep of a much larger decline, you know, the near-term outlook is the same, whether I was a bull or a bear. I think the market's on the cusp of a decline.
And then, you know, the counter that we're hearing a ton on, like the noon business hour and analysts mm-hmm. on CNBC and the likes, hey, you know, tech's had its run. You know, the NVIDIA and a lot of the tech giants have really dragged this rally to where it is now. We have a broadening participation of other stocks, and that's going to take yep. hold here, and this is all going higher. What, you know, that's the counter of yeah. kind of the concerns here. I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, I would acknowledge that breadth has improved, and the rally has indeed broadened out relative to how things were trading last year. But that doesn't mean the trend's going to continue. So I'll mention two things. I think the chart of Treasury yields suggests the yields are going higher over the next month, so that the 10-year, which got up to about 4.35% in February, I think it's going to go above that level, Andy. And the reason why this is maybe important.
So you think yields are on their way higher?
Yeah.
Which is definitely a negative for stocks, especially growth.
Again, if we get inflation data that pushes back the idea of the first rate cut from June to something beyond that, I think Treasury yields would react by rising. So that implies, or let me rephrase this, over the last 6 to 12 months, the Russell 2000 has been more correlated to Treasury yields than the S&P 500. So when yields have gone up, the Russell 2000 has gone down. So if I'm right about Treasury yields ticking higher because inflation comes in a little hotter than people expect, I think the Russell 2000 is going to pull back. The other thing I would point out is the dollar, to me, looks like it is also going to rally 1% to 2% from the current level. And the reason, again, is the outlook for inflation in the next month or two, I think, isn't going to give FOMC members the confidence they need to feel comfortable cutting rates in June. So the market, I think, will have to deal with that. And what that implies, I think, is the dollar moving higher, Treasury yields moving higher, and I think that's going to pose a negative for equities. And again, if the S&P breaks that channel to the downside, I think we're likely to see more selling. And one last thing, there is $64 billion invested in call writing on stock indices, individual stocks, based on low volatility.
Explain that. Explain that to the gains listener.
Okay.
There's a lot of people still kind of new to this.
Yes, yes. So basically, these funds are writing call options, let's say on the S&P, they're writing a call option at 5,300, 5,400. And when they sell that call option, they take in money. And the idea being is, and on individual stocks as well, that that they'll be able to collect that extra premium unless the market just keeps going up like crazy. And so it's all related and tied to volatility. In 2018, in January, there was about $2 billion in similar VIX products. In other words, that are tied to volatility in the market. In February of 2018, the market started to decline. The S&P wound up declining 10% in 8 days, and the VIX jumped significantly. So I think there is the risk, Andy, that if the market begins to head south, that we'll see volatility increase significantly as the trades that have been put on, betting on volatility remaining low, begin to go against those positions. And as they cover, that will increase volatility. So the table is set for a sharp increase in volatility and a decline in the market. What we're waiting for is a trigger. And I don't know if that trigger, you know, my assumption here is that the trigger is going to be primarily based on the idea that the Fed isn't going to get the data it wants in order to, if you will, fulfill the notion that they're going to cut three times this year. So given that market participants are pretty much convinced that that's what they're going to get, if we get data that suggests maybe we're not going to get three cuts, maybe only two, that could be the trigger that sets
selling
in motion.
In that camp. There's no way they're going to deliver three, but it's just I think with inflation where we're at, I just don't see it. So
One thing. Okay, the irony here is the percentage of people and economists who think a recession is coming has declined significantly. So now no one is expecting a recession.
As you and I potentially are, though. Hey, and the Gaines listener, if you're listening to this, go ahead.
So, again, the labor market has been the linchpin. And as I pointed out, the household survey has been much weaker than the establishment survey. But everybody pays attention more so to the establishment survey than anything else. The National Federation of Independent Businesses, which is basically a group that reports and surveys small businesses, their plans to hire more people in February dropped from 18% to 12%. It's the lowest it's been since about 2017. Historically, declines like that have led increases in unemployment, the unemployment rate, by about 6 months. So in other words, under the surface, there's more and more evidence building that the labor market isn't as healthy as it appears on the surface. And I think one of the big surprise could happen as we get to mid-year and beyond, that the economy slows more than expected. And yes, the Fed does indeed cut rates three times, but it's not because they can or because inflation is so low.
It's because they have to, which is even a worse way to have to cut rates.
Historically, the market doesn't respond well to the Fed cutting because of economic weakness.
Yeah, the market doesn't like when the Fed's cutting rates out of desperation. So with everything that we've said here, then, what's the play for the Gaines listener? Give us something to work with here, Jim.
Well, aggressive traders can short the S&P if it gets above 5261. That was the high last week. There's a chance it can go a little bit higher and get above that, or below 5150, because I think that would constitute a breakdown. I'm looking for treasury yields to go higher in the near term, But I think TLT, which is the long-dated Treasury bond ETF, can drop below 91, maybe down to 89.5. I think that will subsequently rally to 105, 109, if I'm right about the economy slowing markedly in the second half of this year. And then lastly, I think gold is going to have a pullback toward 2100, maybe 2070. But I do believe that gold is going to rally above 2300 this year and maybe make a run towards 2400. Again, if I'm right and the Fed is cutting rates because the economy is weakening, Treasury bonds are going to rally. The dollar is going to weaken, which will be beneficial for gold.
Yeah, and that's, well, that was my next question, is gold, which is had a bit of a run as of late. Thoughts on gold?
Yeah. Well, in early February, when gold was trading around 2100, I recommended buying gold because my expectation was that we were going to see gold rally above the high from last year and at least rally up to 2200. Last week, I recommended taking half that position off when gold traded above 2200, and I would remove the balance of it if it drops much below. Well, I know IAU, that's what I recommended, was the ETF, if it drops much below about $40.60. So I'm looking for a pullback in gold because, as I said, I think near-term Treasury yields can tick higher on less than favorable inflation news over the next month. That ought to give the dollar a lift, and I think that would be negative for gold. Once that is done, that's, you know, my take is I think gold's going to have a pretty nice move to the upside.
And as far as the international front, we always talk about diversification. Some folks that are looking really hard or who've already told us to make that move into Japan. We've seen some gains there. Your thoughts on the international front?
Yeah, I think Japan is probably topping right here, Andy.
Yeah, it's had quite a run.
It's had a great run.
Yeah. Would you be unloading if you had that position right now?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Right. Their central bank is gradually, glacially moving toward raising interest rates. I think the yen is likely to bottom in the not-too-distant future. And their stock market has been rallying as the yen has declined. So if the yen bottoms, and as I said, I think their central bank is going to gradually move to raise rates later this year, the yen will start to firm up, and I think that's going to be a headwind for the Japanese stock market.
And then as far as any other asset classes that there may be a play here?
Well, I think near-term Bitcoin is similar to what we've seen, a huge move up. It's way overbought. Sentiment is wildly bullish. So I think Bitcoin is topping as it's nearing this $70,000 mark. And my assumption is that a decline I'm going to look something up real quick here, Andy. Appreciate it.
And you know, one thing real quick while you're talking or while you're looking that up, and we're talking crypto, I personally have unloaded crypto at the top here. I mean, not everything. I have a position where I'm dollar cost averaging in Ethereum and Bitcoin long term. That's being held. But in my trading account, after buying Bitcoin at the lows, when we talked about that on the Gains podcast, December of 2022, when we backed up the truck, there is some profit taking at these levels. I just think with those big gains, it's never a problem to you know, lock in some of those gains, knowing we do have a long-term Ethereum Bitcoin position. And that's the same thing for some of those tech stocks that we've been holding. You know, when NVIDIA came out with their earnings and it continued the rally, that was a sell the news type situation for me. Yep. And the stock kept going. Things seemed frothy, and I got to be honest, unloaded some of the gains or locked in some of those gains We've made on the likes of NVIDIA, Meta, and so forth. So I'm for you with there, or definitely with you on that, because pulling some dry powder here for the next move is not a bad idea. So go ahead, pick up.
Yeah, no, I would say that in terms of Bitcoin, just looking at the chart, that a pullback towards 50,000 would be pretty normal.
And you know what could happen really quick.
I mean, it's a volatile mid 40s. You know, 45,000 is certainly a possibility, because that's kind of where it broke out from in the first part of February. It was trading below 45,000, and then obviously the anticipation of Bitcoin ETFs really lit a fire under it. So,
and now that I believe is now baked into the market. Halving, these ETFs, and again, I think we've just had so much movement with all these different areas that a pullback, taking profit, and then you've talked about some of the underlying things here.
Yep. And I really want to, you know, give you a pat on the back, Andy, because you've, in terms of Bitcoin, you've done a really good job of identifying lows and highs. And, you know, that's not easy when you're dealing with something as volatile as Bitcoin, but I think you have a great seat of the pants feel for when markets are getting too depressed and when they're getting too ebullient. And obviously, we're seeing a lot of ebullience in Bitcoin and the other crypto vehicles.
Well, and again, that's also how you see markets all the time, is you see things technically and then you start feeling them in the real world. And that using both the technical and the stuff that you see in the real world is just makes, I think, puts together a bulletproof strategy.
Right. Right now we have people that are convinced, you know, as I said, the Fed's going to cut 3 rates because they said so. But Powell said we need confidence. And as I said, my analysis of what's going on in inflation. The other thing I'll point out is food prices dropped a lot last year. Corn and wheat prices have pulled back to multi-year support levels. So my guess is that over the next 6 to 12 months or so, we'll see corn and wheat prices rally probably 15% or more. Soybeans look like they haven't quite gotten down to their long-term support. So what I've basically done in my April macro tides is look at all the things that have dropped significantly to bring inflation down as much as we've seen. But a lot of those things are all in a position of getting bounces. Yep. And that means that inflation is likely to be sticky over the next 6 months at least, and maybe longer. And obviously energy, oil's gone from 70 to over 80. Yep. Gasoline prices, I think, were up 7.5% so far in March. So all that stuff is going to bleed through. And I think, you know, the wake-up call, as I said before, is the March CPI when it comes out on April 10th.
We'll have to circle that day in the calendar. And don't get me started on cocoa prices. But you know what? Jim, as final thoughts here, you know, we covered a lot of ground today, but final thoughts. And again, we are going to watch that key report to see where inflation stands. But, you know, as we wrap up the Gains podcast today, final thoughts, Jim.
Well, again, what I'm always looking for are, what is the narrative? What are the things that people are investing, the ideas that they're investing on? And right now, it's 3 rate cuts, no recession. So, you know, that leads me to want to, all right, let's find, if there are data points that suggest that those assumptions may be challenged. And as I've described, I think inflation is one of them. And I think the fact that the economy, as we get to mid-year and beyond, I think is going to show more slowing than most people expect at this point in time. And it's the surprises that really cause markets to move, more significantly and in less time, not if you just keep getting the same old, same old. So I think we're going to see a fair amount of volatility, Andy, over the next 2 to 4 months, as we, you know, confront some of this stuff.
Big thanks to Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.